and commentary practice statement, and I give the word to Marie-Claire and Matt. Thank you.
So good afternoon. Back in June, you, together with CMAC, you had discussed management commentary and your initial views on long-term and medium-term performance and as well the business strategy. We have taken those into consideration in preparing our papers for the consultative group, which was established in July and had its first meeting in September, on the 28th of September. And we've also used your feedback in preparing the papers for the board. And in the papers we have provided you, you can see how we've taken that feedback and also what was the consultative group feedback on those areas. Just a reminder that the scope of the management commentary project lies within financial reporting, and it's also targeted towards the same primary users as for financial statements and the concept as defined in the conceptual framework. And we're currently in stream one of the project, so we're dealing with the objective of management commentary, the application of materiality to management commentary, and the principles that we would use to prepare the management commentary, and which we will be discussing today in more detail and asking you some questions to get your views. Yeah.
Yes, so in today's session, we wanted to cover objectives for the management commentary, application of materiality to the management commentary, and also some other principles. I suspect we'll probably find we take most time on objectives. That's normally how the discussion runs. What we're doing is both looking for your thoughts that will both guide our drafting, but also the factors that would help preparers in their drafting of a management commentary. One of the key themes that we as a team have borne in mind with the whole management commentary project is the need to remain principles-based, so the management commentary is addressing the specific circumstances of the business, but at the same time support more rigour and more clarity over what's required of a management commentary. So as we go through, I hope you'll see areas where we've successfully come up with a way of doing that, but if there are other areas that you feel don't work, then that sort of insight would be particularly welcome. Just before I go into objectives, I'll just make one statement. There is no expectation that the management commentary will be about predicting the future. Whatever words we put into our slide packs and probably into our illustrative drafting, a management commentary is going to be forward-looking, but it's about providing historical information that provides insight into the future that investors and others can take and apply that insight, rather than expecting management to predict the future themselves. So if there are anywhere areas where we've given the impression to the contrary, I apologise, that's certainly not the intention. So in your packs, we've asked you some broad questions on the objectives for management commentary. And I suppose our priority here is to ensure that we put down in as simple a form as possible exactly what it is that we are asking preparers to produce with a management commentary, effectively a simple test of success. I think some of our observations of some of the challenges that exist in this area are that sometimes there's a lack of clarity over what narrative reporting frameworks are intended to do, what they're intended to deliver. So one of the things we've been thinking about as a team is how we can provide greater clarity there. And you'll see the approach set out in your packs. which is illustrated on page 24 and 25, broadly is that a management commentary provides context for the financial statements. So it's about interpreting the financial statements, the information you need to interpret the financial statements. It is focused on information that is relevant to an assessment of the entity's future net cash flows and management stewardship of the entity's resources. That is something that is taken direct from the conceptual framework. We felt it potentially needs saying in a management commentary to provide that added clarity of focus. And then the third element in terms of headline objective for a management commentary is that it should be through the eyes of management. So it's the information that management considers is relevant to an understanding of the entity's future cash flows and management stewardship of those cash flows. As Marie-Claire said, we have already run one consultative group session on this, and that session highlighted a couple of areas that we've sort of taken forward with consideration of the objectives. Firstly, there was quite a strong view that the management commentary should link to the purpose of the entity, and by purpose we mean the mission of the entity. So what is it there to deliver over the long term? And secondly, we had some concerns about using language around value creation, for example, or long-term value. Notwithstanding those concerns, the group was keen that we should make some explicit reference to that. So we're seeking to do that in our drafting. The concerns around long-term perspective are, firstly, there is a concern that if we start using language such as short, medium and long-term, we will inevitably get questions over how long is the short-term, how long is the medium-term, how long is the long-term. What we're actually looking for in the management commentary is information that's relevant to an assessment of the entity's cash flows over its whole life. So that's the concept that we've been seeking to capture here. The other concern with using language around long-term is that it could potentially provide cover for non-disclosure of matters that actually users of the management commentary would really like to know about. So, for example, if you have an issue that the management team is reasonably confident that it will be resolved in the long term, then we don't want to provide cover for non-disclosure of that issue if it's actually going to be relevant to a user's assessment of the information in the management commentary. So that's what we've been trying to balance in terms of the language around long-term perspective in the management commentary. We're absolutely trying to get the essence of that long-term perspective, but without creating those issues that I've just referred to. And then also on objectives, we recognise that people come from management or approach management commentary from a number of different perspectives. That might be because of different narrative reporting traditions in different countries. It might also be that because those involved in preparing the management commentary may not be ordinarily familiar with financial statements preparation. So we've sought to provide some guidance to go behind those headline objectives, and that's illustrated on page 25 of the pack you received. And really that guidance is addressing two potential problems that we see. The first is that the management commentary provides the right information but on the wrong issue. By that I mean it addresses matters that aren't really important to the long-term success of the business. So we've sought to provide some language there that doesn't use words like short, medium and long term, but does use words like current performance of the entity, expectations of factors affecting future performance, and importantly also focusing on the key resources and relationships that the entity depends on for its long-term success. So we've sought to approach that issue by providing that short, medium, long-term guidance, but in a way that is perhaps less likely to be misinterpreted. The other perspective that we wanted to cover in our headline guidance was the possibility of getting the wrong information on the right issue. And by that, I mean that an entity picks up an issue in its management commentary that is critical to its future success, but it doesn't provide the user of the management commentary with enough insight to assess what that means for the future of the entity. So we've approached that. We recognise that a management commentary will be built up from a series of content elements, so information on the business model, risks, financial performance, operational performance. But we felt that those detailed content elements, which we'll come to in a later stream, needed just the overarching perspective of the entity's strategy. So we're trying to frame that detail within the entity's strategy by saying where you have an issue, set out your strategy for managing the issue, report your progress in managing the issue, and provide users with the information they need to assess the implications of that issue for the entity's future performance. So those are the two areas of guidance that you'll see on in the illustrative wording on page 25. Now, with that, we have a couple of questions that we'd like to put to you, so perhaps Mary-Claire.
So if we start off with the explicit references to the assessment of prospects for future net cash inflows and management stewardship of economic resources, do you agree with that explicit reference in the practice statement? Then we're also asking about the approach on the notion of whole life cash flows and value creations, and is that sufficient to address long term, or do we need to be more explicit on time horizons? And finally, do you agree with the suggested content on page 25 that Matt was explaining, and is there anything else which we should include in the guidance?
Okay.
Christoph?
Yeah, I can give it a start. For question one, I wondered whether these references are supposed to make the management commentary in the respect of predicting the future in any way different than the financial statements. Because the purpose of financial statements is to provide information that allows users to predict the future. And I think the important thing is you provide information that enables others to predict the future.
Yes.
If the intention is that this should be the same for the management commentary, I would recommend that the wording is aligned, that people don't think there is a difference. Yeah? If there is supposed to be a difference, you would need to explain that better, because from reading the stuff, it wasn't clear to me whether there is a difference. I struggle with terms like life cash flows, because life is usually something limited, but a going concern assumption makes you ignore the limitations of life a bit. So that's why this term is a little bit odd in a world in which we think about going concern. The short and long term, I would link it to whether the company in its other communication makes a difference between short-term and long-term. What I think shouldn't happen is that a company in investor decks and other communications talks a lot about, this is my short-term objective, this is my long-term objective, and the management commentary, that doesn't appear. So that's something, if I would take a kind of management approach. If management makes a difference in steering the company and reporting outside financial statements and management commentary makes a difference between short-term and long-term, that should appear in the management commentary. And then based on the borderline between short-term and long-term that management is using, while if management is only talking about the future without making a distinction between short and long-term, I wouldn't force them to do that.
Okay, so you're saying sort of make more use of management's own time horizons.
Yeah. And finally, on question three, the wording to me looks okay. I only wondered what's the definition of risk. It's difficult to talk about what are the risks without providing a definition of risk. Martin and I have some history of discussing that hours and hours. So that's why I would struggle to only throw out the term risk without making people understand what you believe risk is, because there are different definitions of risk out in the world. Or you go again and say management approach, consider a risk what you consider a risk in your internal risk management. Yeah, that would be again alternative, but there would be a kind of definition because you would make people understand what they should assess as risks.
Thanks.
Thank you. I'm commenting on slide 10. Slide 10, there are several questions. I'm going one by one. Question number one, do you agree with introducing explicit reference to assessment of the prospect of future net cash inflow? In the beginning, what you have clarified that you are not wanting us to forecast, that is good. But when you are saying that the objective of this financial statement is to provide the investors an assessment of the amount, timing, and uncertainty of future cash inflow to the entity. Now, if I take your comment that, well, I'm not supposed to give a forecast of future cash inflow, how do I satisfy this requirement that I give an assurance I talk about the uncertainty of future net cash inflow? Is something I have not understood. I mean, how can I give this indication without being quantitative? Or are you saying that a qualitative statement will do? So that is one clarification I would need here.
Shall I pick that one up? So the intent there is that you provide information that is relevant to a user's assessment of the future rather than providing your own assessment as a preparer of the future. Does that?
How do you know?
So what do I say? I don't provide any quantitative information. I only provide qualitative information. Is that what you're saying?
So the information may take the form of quantitative information. For example, it might be historical information on customer retention that would allow a user then to form their own views on your likely customer base going forwards.
Are you going to be prescriptive about it, or are you going to leave to the company to decide whether it is customer information or whether it is something else?
So I think that's where the eyes of management perspective comes in, because I think we have to be very careful that we're not prescribing to companies what is strategically important to them. And you know, some businesses, it might be a customer's story that the information is needed. On others, it may be around IP innovation or something else. So we're seeking to avoid that level of prescription over what's important to the company itself.
Because later on, you are talking about guidance. Now, in your guidance, if you're too much prescriptive, then it becomes mandatory on our part. So, I mean, we are working on a thin ice. You know, I mean, all I request you to consider is that as a standard setter, we should not be too much prescriptive when it comes to future. So that's question number one. Question number two is the entire question I have not understood. I'll read out the question. Do you think this approach addresses sufficiently the notion of whole life cash flows and value creation, or does the practice statement need to include explicit reference to long-term horizons? Now, you are talking here, you are talking about whole life cash flow. Now, what is meant by whole life cash flow?
Okay, so I think we've recognized that that whole life term does cause confusion. Perhaps a better way of putting it is the business's ability to develop and sustain its cash flows into the long term.
Perpetuity of the business is something what you are referring to. You're not referring to whole life. It is perpetuity of the business.
So effectively, it's perpetuity, yes.
Okay. Okay. But it's not coming clear. I don't know. Somewhere it has to be clarified. Question number three is, do you agree with the suggested content as set out in page 25? Now, if you go through page number 25, to me, it is prescriptive. And I don't think it is the job of standard setter to be prescriptive in page number 25. I think we should stay away from that and narrate the principles involved and let the company decide as to how to keep this indication.
So what sort of level of steer would you like as a preparer here then?
Let me decide what kind of comfort I can give to my investors in order to assure perpetuity of my business. Whole life, I'm ignoring the word whole life. I mean, you put the burden on me to give an indication to my investors, and this is how I'm assuring you of the perpetuity of my business, rather than being prescriptive.
But do you think it is prescriptive? Man, it is giving some content of what should be in this commentary. Man, if you don't give, I think this is high level. And if you don't give that, then we should say only management should give information. Or
I'll tell you what. For example, the business model. For example.
Sorry.
For example, business model.
Yeah.
So, business model, as long as I have to talk about my business model, from a bird's eye view, I can talk about that. But no company would like to discuss the business model in detail. I'm prepared to talk about business model as a whole and from a in totality, but not in granularity.
But it is not that we should discuss it in granularity. This,
yeah, right. If it is left to
business model and what I think every company should speak a little bit about the business model and what the objective is, what the
now take for example the relationship. The relationships that affect the entity's ongoing success. Now I may generally speak that my business model is dependent on the relationship I have with my customers. Not beyond that. How do I maintain the relationship? What do I do to maintain that relationship? Is something I would rather not talk about.
Is that on grounds of confidentiality?
Yes, that's the point. Take, for example, the financial and operational performance during the reporting period, that is all right, and its progress against the strategic objective. Again, if you go into detail of the progress of the strategic objective, I'd go to a distance, but not beyond that. I don't know how you'll expand this point later on, but then all I'm saying is that it should be at a level of laying down the principle rather than saying that you have to do this or you have to do that in granularity.
But isn't it a little bit, man, we're hearing that, okay, this other reporting initiatives that, okay, financial statements is really not any more relevant. People want to understand more about customer relationship, business model, strategy, all this kind of, I think, what is not in the numbers. And that is at least what I thought is, okay, what we should deliver to this debate, and this is why we now updating the management commentary. If you are saying that is all not what we should do, I think we should not do this project at all, because that is kind of what we think is be interesting and what we hearing from many stakeholders saying, okay, to become more relevant, we need this kind of updating our management commentary, because financial statements on its own maybe is not sufficient, and we do a little bit participate in this where people think it's more interest in. And
no, I'm not saying no. When for example, the opportunity and risk. All companies, they disclose opportunities and risks. But then as a qualitative statement, opportunity, what are the risks? How am I planning to mitigate that risk? These are all disclosed. But if you say that, well, you have to enter into granularity, no.
No, that is okay. No, I understand. To find the right balance between getting message and...
All I'm saying is that you want us to hit a balance.
Yeah, okay.
But maybe only that the understanding is correct. This is about the objective. The idea is not that this paragraph is followed for each of the item by a long list, and to do this, please disclose the following.
Yes.
I mean, that's what we know from financial statements. Usually you've got a disclosure objective and then a long list of individual disclosures. That's not the intention here, is it?
No, this is intended at a high level as a sort of overall structure for helping you decide what would belong in a management commentary and what would not.
Because, Barindra, you appear to be concerned not with the topics, but with the detail to be provided on the topics.
Correct.
Yeah? Absolutely. But my understanding this year is only the objective, and that from the objectives you shouldn't derive that
absolutely.
You are forced to do it down to the smallest detail.
Why am I raising this question is because if you say that what you have disclosed here at a high level, that is not sufficient for me as an investor to draw a future cash flow, that will be a problem situation.
Okay, thanks. Stephen?
Similar issues, I guess it will be a common theme, but maybe I'll try and present it in a slight different way. So you've already referred to the issues around whole life, I'd agree, and how far forward we should really be looking is a interesting area of debate and may vary from business to business and actually from philosophy to philosophy, and how you think about management, motivation and so on.
In terms of question one, I think there are a few facts that just drive us to do these kind of things anyway. So we know that investors need to consider the future. The value is generated by future cash flows. If we want people to invest in our company, then we know that we have to give information that allows them to do that. So it's all about the tension, really, on how far you go down prescribing what that looks like. And so, because, of course, investors or potential investors would always want more information, but at the end of the day, they could choose not to invest. So there is that line. So I guess my concern is, and it's a concern that you already know, you know, it's dangerous to start talking about forward-looking future cash flows, what's going to happen, what's management's perspective. But looking within the framework that you've drawn upon slide 25, I think maybe the concern on prescriptive is ordinarily these matters will include. That might be felt to be prescriptive. I appreciate there's a lot of detail. So maybe a way to make sure that balance is achieved is to talk a little bit about the things that you don't expect this to do. So you said, well, you don't expect this to project future cash flows. You do expect this to be through management lens. Now, that's actually quite important for the preparer because we get audited on these things, and I'm sure you're aware that fair, balanced and understandable creates a lot of debates in boardrooms between the auditors and management, and whether management's view is the same as the auditor's view, and of course, at the end of the day, who's running the company. But there's an audit responsibility as well. You've got that tension there. So I think by
making sure you get some positive guidance, I guess, into this, or negative guidance, however you're thinking of it, that might redress some of these issues.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, this is not expected to be prescriptive. This is through management. Those kind of things may just help to give us comfort that we're not going to have to do something that actually you may not intend, but that's the way that it ends up being applied in practice.
Yeah, so it's, I think we're probably missing a bit of top and tailing in that.
It could regard. Help. Could I just ask a question just on this point? If it's not through management eyes, whose eyes would it be through? I guess that's what I'm not sure who else it could be other than management. Perhaps it needs to be said explicitly, which it will do, but I'm not sure.
No, I think that's the point. It needs to be explicit, mm-hmm. because otherwise, mm-hmm. then you're just going to say, well, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah. it's obviously through management's eyes. Yeah. Well, no, it doesn't say that.
I think
what is the name of said management company?
Yes, but there's enough debate at the moment about what goes into management commentary for us to flag this as a concern.
Okay. Sandra.
I wanted to just talk about question three and looking at page 25. There's a couple of areas I think that you could improve on the language. In the second paragraph, where you talk about management considers could influence users' assessment, that's extremely broad. That's subject to anybody's interpretation. So I think you need to be more explicit on things that actually would change investors' view. And then when you get down to discussing opportunities and risk, I think the phrasing is vague. If you talk about risks, you could go on for 10 pages. You know, what types of risks? Some are just general risks in the economy. Do you want those risks covered, or do you just want the risks that are unique to the industry or the specific company? Same with opportunities. You don't want to give away any potential acquisitions or areas that you're thinking about going into because it can tip your hand. So you need to have appropriate restrictions. I think you also need to think about the preparers and the legal environment in which they operate and whether or not, you know, if they're in a litigious country, it could add a lot of risk to them. And thinking about the language within that context, I think, would be real helpful.
Ian?
I think it's... I like a lot of what's in the original practice statement. I think it's very helpful, and particularly for emerging markets where there may not be too much guidance. There was a proposal to use it in Switzerland. In Switzerland, the regulatory guidance is that companies must produce a finance report, and that's it. That's all it says. And there was a proposal to use the original DP, and it died a death basically because of the forward-looking stuff. The rest of it, everybody accepted. There was huge discussion about anything, the sort of future objectives, future. And that, including that in this document, is like a poison pill. And I think part of what you're trying to achieve here, I'd suggest actually you do want people to use this thing and actually apply it in practice. And I think if you almost step back and say, okay, financial statements are used for two things. One, to report to the shareholders on the performance of management in the current year. And if you restrict it to that, I think you can get a lot of acceptance to it and a lot of people use it. And then there's the second thing where obviously everybody looks at the financials and thinks, okay, well, what does this tell us about the future? Should we invest? And they look at the financial statements for that. And maybe there should be some commentary on that. And as soon as you start to legislate on that or attempt to, that's when all the discussion happens. And depending on the environment you're in, you don't want to give, quote, guidance. We don't call it guidance because if we call it guidance, some people might think that that's where we think the share price is going to be, and if it's not there in a year's time, then they come and sue us, for example. So there's a whole load of this kind of arguments that you open up as soon as you put anything forward-looking or potentially forward-looking, and that's even in the existing one. So I'd almost suggest sort of stepping back, saying, okay, let's get a management sort of commentary, a guidance on the current year's results and the performance company, and then let's think separately about, okay, what should we be saying about future prospects, risks, and all this kind of stuff, because that is an entirely separate discussion, and it becomes much more political, emotional, and whatever once you get into that stage.
Yes, one of the things that we could do is just be explicit about it containing historical information. I don't know whether you'd feel that would go far enough in terms of clarifying that point.
Yeah, but then if you're talking about sort of prospects for future net cash flows, once you start putting that in, I'm saying that's like a poison pill. A lot of people will look at this and they will be very reluctant to adopt it, and then I don't think you're going to allow people to sort of adopt bits of it and not adopt other parts, and then it'll just be a sort of nice little library document that's there, and okay, we ticked the box, we did that, but nobody actually uses the thing in practice, which I think is a bit of a pity because a lot of it is very good.
Okay, thanks, Dean. Do we have now Trent on the phone?
Yes, I'm here.
Do you have also any comment, Trent? Because otherwise, interrupt us if you want.
I would say there's been some very, very good points made. I'm very sympathetic to Sanders' comment about legal environment and the risk associated with that. I'm very sympathetic to what Ian has said about the sort of that future-looking information is problematic from a risk perspective. I think that's a big issue. Unfortunately, I was taking notes when Matt was talking, so I may have missed some of what he said. But, you know, our company here, we've been in business in one shape or another for over 100 years. And you think about people, 110 or 120 years ago, they just marveled at, being able to talk to somebody in the other room on a telephone line, being able to watch a webcast from, thousands of miles away or thousands of kilometers away. It would have not been on the long-term horizon. It would not have been foreseeable. So I have trouble understanding or thinking about long-term. Those are probably my primary comments. But again, maybe coming back to Sanders' comment about risk, I'm all for, trying to come to grips with materiality, but, an accountant's perspective on materiality or a financial analyst's perspective on materiality may not be the same as a lawyer's perspective or a court's perspective.
Yeah.
And I'll just stop there.
Okay, thanks for that, Trent. Now we go to Murillo.
I like the idea of using the conceptual framework as a basis for the management commentary, but I kind of dislike the idea of emphasizing that the assessment of prospects for future net cash inflows and management stewardship specifically for purposes of management commentary. And the reason I dislike it is because these are also relevant for the financial statements. So emphasizing that specifically for the management commentary somehow makes me feel like it kind of diminishes the importance of these objectives in the financial statement. So you have the same objective for the financial statement, which you have for the management commentary, but you emphasize that as if, look, this is the report that you really need to look if you want to reach these objectives here. I also don't think the idea of establishing a time frame for the cash flows, I don't think will work. I agree with the comments that have been made before. And on page 25, I also agree with the comments that have been made before, especially comments made by Sandra. But I also have I don't know if top item B here, because it says that it mentions the financial and operational performance during the reporting period and how it relates to the strategic objectives. But I'm not sure if the financial performance of 1 year, for instance, could be enough for someone to say that strategic objectives of an entity have been affected or not. So you might be requiring too much of an entity when you put something like that here. It might be too much.
So when you read the words on page 25, you're seeing them in isolation rather than collectively, I think.
What do you mean?
I think your concern is that just the current financial performance, for example, is not enough to understand the entity's strategic.
Yes, because
objective.
Topic B explicitly says that one possible matter that could be addressed is how the current financial performance affects the strategic objectives of an entity. I don't know if that's generally going to be possible to infer.
Yeah. So what we're seeking to do there is to ask you to consider all of those factors collectively and then focus on the ones that do affect the strategic objectives of the entity.
You should be able to say, okay, this performance of the last year, what happened? Okay, does it has helped our strategic objective, or has it not? Or is it? I think that should be possible. And if you, as a manager of a company, are not able to say, okay, this last year, how it has developed in our strategic objective, maybe there's something wrong. Then you should say that. It's also useful information then for people.
Sometimes you need.
You cannot say, okay, it will develop in the same direction, but you should at least say, okay, my strategic goal is, I don't know, to get maybe new business in 17 countries, and you should then able to say, okay, my last year performance on that, has it helped this strategic goal or not? I think that should be possible. That's too detailed. When we have now 9 questions for 15 minutes left.
Yeah, just one question. The principles has been already laid down in conceptual framework. We are not talking about aligning the practice statement along with the conceptual framework, right? So am I right in understanding that the die is cast? So nothing much can be done in practice statement because the principles what we are talking about are all laid down in conceptual framework.
I think it would be difficult for us to move away from what's in the conceptual framework.
Right.
But the purpose is to add more guidance and hopefully be helpful for preparers. And to go to Murilo's point on having the same emphasis as for the financial statements, on the emphasis on cash flows and stewardship, it's because the management commentary and the financial statements are to be treated as one package as well. And the management commentary is providing the context for the financial statements.
Okay, so I'm conscious that we've got 15 minutes if we're not to get into trouble for overrunning. So very, very briefly from me, the rest of your pack covers materiality, where we feel that as preparers you potentially need some help in terms of applying the concept of materiality to a narrative reporting pack. The approach we've suggested there asks you to think about what's material to the future success of the entity and then what's the material information someone would need to understand that. So that's materiality. Completeness, on page 35, we set out this idea of narrative coherence as a way of building up a story of the factors that drive the success of the entity across the different content elements. So what's important to the business model, what external factors are potentially affecting it, what progress are you as a management team making in managing those factors. On neutrality, we cover five facets of neutrality, where we see some opportunities just to provide some practical guidance to help you consider whether management commentary is neutral or not. And then on page 38, we talk about comparability. So I think in our last 10 minutes, it would be good to just open up for any specific thoughts on those areas.
Okay, Christoph. First, a quick comment. There is on page 11, the statement, what is discussed by an entity's board should be considered material for management commentary. I think that's difficult. If management, for instance, has a discussion on the performance and potential of their direct reports, I don't think that this is something that should be disclosed in a management commentary. There is a lot discussed in boardrooms, and I don't think that a broad statement, whatever is discussed in the boardroom, is material for the management commentary. I think that's too far-reaching.
That's too sweeping. Yeah. Okay.
Other than that, on question four, I'm fine. Question five, I think it would be worthwhile to emphasize that in the context of management commentary, the qualitative materiality assessment may be even more important than it is in the context of financial statements, because a lot of what we're talking about is not numbers. And that's why a quantitative materiality analysis may often be difficult. I struggled with using selection as one of the aspects of neutrality, because I would have thought selection, if I've done the right selection out of a completeness notion, what is left for a selection notion in neutrality? That's what I struggled with, because if I have completeness and I've selected everything that is material, so what would then still be the room for maneuver from the selection under neutrality? There I struggled to see selection. Okay.
I mean, just to explain on that one, it's where you have perhaps a choice of different indicators or analysis you could provide to address a particular issue. So you might say, my business is dependent on winning new customers, so you could provide information on customer satisfaction, or you could provide historical information on how many customers you've won in the past. So it's seeking to address that choice.
Okay. And finally, I struggle with verifiability. If on the one hand we say we talk through eyes of management and people want to know management's judgment, the more I want to know that, the less verifiable it may be.
Yeah.
And for instance, if a company is bold enough to put out their revenue expectation for the next 3 or 4 years, that's what management maybe desires or hopes to achieve. If you say, well, you're only allowed to put it in if it's verifiable, then I take that out, because the future is hardly ever verifiable. So that's why I struggle with that. I think it would limit a lot of disclosures that companies want to make on a voluntary basis.
Yes.
Thanks, Christoph. Stephen?
In the interest of time, won't pick up on the same points as Christoph. I agree with most of those. Just on completeness, I think I like the idea of talking about a coherent narrative. I think that's obviously common sense. But I get very worried whenever we start making reference to internal decisions or internal metrics. It is arguable that IFRS 8 changed internal reporting. And therefore, we need to make sure that we allow the businesses to run the way that they think it's best for them to run, and not try and shine too much spotlight on internal processes which are best kept internal.
Liliana?
Yes, I come back with the comparability and the proposition of the staff about explanation of rationality and methodology, where the calculation of metrics differ from the prevalent industrial practice. We already talked about that, but I'm wondering if, for instance, prevalent industry practice says that you are publishing some sort of operating profit, which differs from IFRS, and the company stick to IFRS and publish only IFRS. So I need to explain why. I would like to see some more more link between what is a management performance measurement and this kind of rules.
Yeah, and I think that prevalent point is causing us a few issues, so we'll look at that again.
Maybe I have.
Can you a little bit elaborate on management stewardship of economic resource? Does it mean effectiveness of internal control, a similar concept?
No. You're referring to strategy for managing the economic resources. So, what we're looking for there is how the factors that the entity depends on for its success have been managed, rather than the internal controls of them specifically.
Could you elaborate your answer on the verifiability aspect? I mean, your question was raised, but then I quite didn't get it. Have you made up your mind on verifiability aspect or not?
No, we haven't. So far we have a board paper with out at the moment on objectives, but haven't covered the other areas. Verifiability was identified as being a very attractive characteristic by our consultative group, which we recognise, but equally there are going to be some things in management commentary that won't be verifiable. So perhaps it's a question of whether we can provide any support for people in saying things that won't be verifiable and for saying things in a way that is more verifiable than it would be if they said it in another way.
Why I'm asking this, the moment you bring in the verifiability aspect, the management commentary will be audited. Now, that's a situation where you can't limit the verifiability aspect in a whole lot of management commentary. Then the auditor will have to verify the entire management commentary.
Yeah.
Okay. Nick.
I don't know. I was going to have an overall comment on the objectives. I don't even want to come back to deal with the detailed comments.
You have the final comments then. First, Murillo.
I agree with the comment that Christoph made about the materiality. I think it may have a need for more qualitative guidance than guidance to deal with it quantitatively. I'm not sure if the proposal here, the approach proposed here to create a two-stage approach, I'm not sure if it's a good thing to differentiate the application of the concept of materiality for the financial statements and the materiality for the management commentary. And besides that, I have a question. What is the notion of future materiality that is mentioned here in slide 11?
So that was that there may be a difference in assessing what is material currently and then looking at future cash flows. Should there be an assessment of those type of, for that materiality as well? It was something which came up in the consultative group.
Ian?
Just briefly, I think the verifiability question rather touched something earlier. There's stuff on the current year's results that absolutely should be verifiable. I think if you're putting stuff in the management commentary and saying this was because of X, Y, and Z, that absolutely should be verifiable. I think where the verifiability touches, if it's forward-looking, then it becomes practically impossible to do. So I think it's maybe the right answer to the wrong question, that one. But I think in terms of current year performance, absolutely it should be verifiable.
Yeah, and I just want to return briefly to the objective set out on slide 25. And I guess I'm slightly surprised by the messages that I'm picking up, because from what I see, there are many examples of fantastic management commentary statements out there already that largely meet those objectives. I know we can argue about some of the words here, and no doubt some of them are penned by organisations represented in this room. And I think, as an ask, it seems entirely reasonable to me. I agree there may be issues around the message about the poison pill being explicit about forward-looking. We have to be careful about that. But I think generally our objective here is to try and lift the bar across the whole corporate sector. And there's some fantastic reports out there today, which I would go through this list and say, tick, 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 tick. All of these issues are spoken to or written to. So I guess I find a bit of a disconnect from what I've heard this afternoon.
But I don't know. My understanding was I don't think that people struggle with the objectives. It's just the fear that we see it the same way than you have it in a lot of the IFRS standards, in which you got a disclosure objective followed by 5 pages of individual detailed disclosures that you got to do.
Of course,
if that was the case, I think that's something we would struggle with, not with the objectives, but rather what detail is required to meet the objectives. I think that was, colleagues, please correct me if misunderstood, but I think that is where our concerns are, not about the objectives themselves.
That's useful clarification.
But you have not seen our way how we now develop new disclosure objectives. That
is, no, we haven't seen
this project
it yet.
And the concerns maybe is not so. So, Trent, do you have any comment finally on that before we have the break?
I would agree with what Nick said. I think there's actually a lot of good stuff out there today. I know in our own case here, we looked to see if we could say that we complied with the management commentary, the objective, that our disclosure was compliant, but we can't do it because of the forward-looking stuff. To go back to, I think it was Ian's point, but that's all I would say at this point.
Okay, thank you. Then we have a 15-minute break before we go into goodwill and impairment. Thank you.